please the court. Ron Rogers was able to do something that evaded Bus's engineers for years. Ron Rogers was able to develop and patent a pole saw chainsaw combination that DESA had tried to make and was unable to make, even though they admitted they were aware of the prior art for decades. The district, Mr. Rogers filed his patent application and obtained patent protection and brought an action against DESA for patent infringement. The district court invalidated the patent under 35 U.S.C. 103 for obviousness. Rogers asserts that the district court committed reversible error by deciding factual issues against Rogers. The first factual issue decided against Rogers relates to the first Ram versus Deere inquiry, the scope and content of the prior art. The primary reference at the district court level was the Moore reference. There was a dispute as to what Moore shows. DESA's expert, Mr. Radcliffe, testified and provided an affidavit that the Moore reference showed a chainsaw. Rogers submitted countering evidence by way of affidavit that shows that the Moore reference does not show a chainsaw on the end of a pole, and nor does the pole appear to be functionally able to handle a chainsaw, which would lead one skilled in the art away from using Moore in the combination.
What is the inventive concept here of the patent?
The inventive concept is what is in the claim. It's the combination of each of the elements that allows a chainsaw to be releasably mounted on the end of a telescoping pole and all the attributes that go with it.
And what is your position about what is different in this patent that was outside of the prior art,
not included? None of the prior art shows the specific combination claimed in Rogers' patent. That is a removable chainsaw on a telescoping pole that has an adjustable length cord. It also includes a triggered depression device that holds the chainsaw that's remotely located in the depressed on position, and includes a second functionally operative trigger or switch at the bottom of the pole that the user can manually operate.
So all of the pieces are there. So is your position really that there was no motivation to combine all of these pieces? I mean, you're not suggesting that none of the parts that you've just described was in the prior art, were in the prior art?
The prior art has the pieces. That's correct. I mean, the Causey reference, for example, has some of the features. But each of the references, as we set forth in our brief, is missing at least three of the elements.
What's Causey missing? I mean, Causey has the chainsaw, it has the trigger, as far as I can tell, it has the pole, and it has the bracket. What's it missing?
It doesn't have an adjustable length pole.
It's the telescoping pole that's missing from Causey?
And the coupling nut and the adjustable length cord. Those are the three elements that are missing in Causey.
Adjustable length cord. When you say adjustable length cord, you mean the spiral cord that goes through the inside of the pole?
That's the Rogers embodiment, is a spiral length cord. That's correct. Now, DESA has taken the position, and one of the things that I'd like to address today is that the Rogers affidavit conflicts with earlier deposition testimony that he presented ostensibly related to the Moore reference.
Unfortunately, let me ask you one other question.
Yes.
I mean, there is, in some of the briefs back and forth, discussion of the problem that whether the pole is strong enough. I think Mr. Rogers suggested that the pole in Moore didn't look strong enough to hold a chainsaw. And there's some suggestion on the other side that it was after the stronger, cheaper telescoping pole was discovered that's when the accused device was commercially made. There's nothing that I can see in Mr. Rogers' invention that has anything to do with the strengthening of the pole. Is that correct?
There's nothing in the patent application that talks about the strengthening of the pole. That's
so whether correct. You have a weak pole or a strong pole, it would anticipate or infringe either way, as long as it was a pole that was telescoping, right?
Well, I understand your point, but I think the argument about the weakness of the pole goes to whether or not the pole that's used in connection with a device that's not a chainsaw can be substituted for a device that is a chainsaw.
Well, I'm not sure I understand your answer. I mean, if Mr. Rogers did not contribute any, there was no aspect of his invention that involved a pole of particular design, other than that it's telescoping, wouldn't any device with any pole that was connected to a chainsaw, as long as it was a telescoping pole, infringe? But you wouldn't say, gosh, this is really weak. It doesn't hold, it's not going to hold up more than a couple of months with heavy use. It's too weak a pole. Therefore, it doesn't infringe.
I would have to agree with your premises on infringement. That's correct.
And therefore, also anticipation or obviousness, right?
Well, except the question here relates to whether there's a suggestion to combine a specific piece of prior art that doesn't necessarily relate to the inventive technology, the chainsaw technology. The piece of prior art in question is used for a hedge trimmer, and it's not. There's a question as to whether or not one skilled in the chainsaw art would look, in the chain pole saw art would look to a device for a hedge trimmer, where the invented pole there includes elements which would take it out of the realm of being useful for a chainsaw.
Mr. Hoffman, one of the points that you stress is that your sense that the trial court didn't consider your evidence, your objective considerations, and you refer particularly to the failure of others. Would you tell us where the flaw lay in this, in your view?
Yes, sir. There's a plethora of authority from this court that says you need to examine all. If the evidence of secondary considerations exists, it must be considered as part of the analysis. Here the district court paid lip service to everything other than the commercial success. It evaluated the commercial success and said, I find that no amount of commercial success can overcome my prima facie finding of obviousness. But here, there are particularly the Ashland Oil, the Advanced Display System case at 212 F. 2nd 1272 sheds light on the issue. It says that the court has stated that evidence of failed attempts by others could be determinative of the issue of obviousness by itself. In fact, citing the earlier Panduit decisions, it says that a competitor's failure to develop the patented invention suggests obviousness.
Did you cite that case in your brief? I didn't.
No, it did not. This is a supplemental citation. The advanced display case is a supplemental citation. And the Panduit case said that failure by others, including the accused infringer, which is what happened here, to develop the claim invention, even though it was aware of all the prior art, they admit they were aware of all the prior art since 1989 and yet failed to develop the invention, is virtually irrefutable evidence of non-obviousness. Here the district court did not consider the long-felt need, the trials and failures of DESA. And I would submit that the failure of DESA was not because of a heavy pole saw. Nowhere in the record is there any drawing or any corroboration from anybody other than a disinterested witness that DESA claims to have made a two-piece chainsaw pole saw design. Everything we cite and show in the record was a different developmental path that they abandoned in 1983. Now, Mr. Fisher from Home Depot, another interested party, stated that he saw in late 1995 or early 1996 a design by DESA, but he didn't like it because it was too heavy. Now, I suggest that his declaration conflicts with the facts as admitted by DESA. For example, the Janssen Declaration at 885, again, the documents are belied by the only documentary evidence. They have no documents to support, to corroborate their idea. Further, the memo that we cited at...
Could you go back and explain what exactly is the point you were making about Janssen?
The point that I'm making about Janssen is that it does not corroborate Dess's story that they had the two-piece pole saw design. And I say it actually conflicts with the other admissions Dess has made in the record about what they had and when they had it.
So does this go to the point, you haven't mentioned copying. I mean, I thought you were talking about long-felt need. Is that in the context of long-felt need, or is that in the context of copying?
It goes to both. I mean, it shows that Dessa was working on it. I mean, my discussion here talks about Dessa has been working on the device since the 1970s, admittedly so. They were aware of all the prior art since 1989 and couldn't do it. So there's the trials and failures. There is this evidence of copying that Dessa did try to counter by submitting this declaration of Mr. Janssen. And I submit that it conflicts with the other statements that Dessa has made. Particularly, the memo at 270 and Mr. Rohr at A854 says that Dessa ceased all work on their developmental project in 1993. That's when they stopped doing it. Mr. Fisher at A784 and Mr. Rohr at A854 says the project was not even resurrected until August of 1996. This is even spelled out in Dess's brief at 55. But Janssen says that he saw a saw in late 1995 or early 96. This occurred during a time period where Dess admits they weren't even working on the project. It lay dormant since 93, not to be resurrected until after Mr. Janssen says he saw the product. So I believe that what the record does support is that Mr. Rogers showed Dessa a videotape in 1996 in about the October time.
October 15th, right?
Correct.
Right, but that was after the August 1996 hardware show that I guess it's Rohrer testifies about, right?
That's correct.
Okay, which is what Rohrer says, I see this Mr. Longarm, and then this is the pole we've been looking for.
Correct.
But he said that's the point at which they started back up.
I agree. That's what he said.
And you just think that that's
Mr. Janssen said I saw a pole in '95 from Home Depot that was ready for sale in our store. That's before Mr. Rohr even says that they were working on it.
I'm missing what's inconsistent about those two statements. Mr. Janssen, there was a pole in our store.
Well, Mr. Janssen was
didn't see a pole until August of '96.
Mr. Janssen says that Mr. Janssen was proffered. He was proffered to support the position that Dessa had the combination of the two-piece design that they later came out with the heavier saw. And I'm suggesting that his testimony conflicts with Rohr. They never had the two-piece design. It wasn't even resurrected, the project, supposedly, until August of '96. But all of that considered, Dessa says in 95, when they met with Mr. Janssen, they were ready to market the product. But there's not a single drawing to suggest that they were ready to market the product. There's nothing in the record that shows they even had the design. So I submit that none of the evidence corroborates the story. It was only after Rogers showed them the two-piece pole saw design in the videotape that Dessa was able to resurrect the project and make what had evaded their engineers for years.
Now, so this was summary judgment. Are you saying that summary judgment was improper or that the failure to consider the secondary considerations was improper?
I'm saying there's a couple of reasons why the summary judgment was improvidently granted. First, there's a dispute as to the scope and content of the prior, namely the Moore reference itself. Secondly, on the legal conclusion, the district court failed to consider relevant and pertinent evidence of secondary considerations.
Okay, let's hear from the other side, and you have some time left. We'll give you enough rebuttal time. Mr. Witkoff, and you can see the issues which are troubling me, at least, that this was summary judgment, and that there were, it looks as if issues that could raise aspects of credibility as to who knew what when were resolved. Well, what's your answer to that?
My answer, Your Honor, is that there, I don't see any inconsistencies in the record at all. I think the evidence has been overwhelming, both in terms of Moore anticipating the patent all by itself, and I can get into that in detail if Your Honor would like, or that Moore, in combination with either Causey or Buckeye, and probably a handful of other references in the record, but let's just focus on those two, in combination, you know, Causey and Moore, or Buckeye and Moore, together, there's a suggestion, a very strong motivation to combine the missing elements, and therefore the patent is invalid, and the court's judgment was correct. The presentation that Mr. Hoffman just presented did not make sense to me because I don't see any inconsistencies in the record in terms of the secondary considerations or the long-felt need. The record has evidence both, and it's in the record here, both in terms of deposition testimony and several declarations.
But they may well have been in the record. Of course, we've heard them.
Yes.
But the district judge left very little doubt that he wasn't relying on secondary considerations.
Well, he did evaluate the secondary considerations. In fact, he was so careful to make sure that he considered all the evidence that he asked the parties to submit supplemental briefing on the secondary considerations factor alone.
But that was just commercial success, right? Let's focus then on long-felt need and copying.
Okay. The court's opinion said expressly that he looked at all these factors, and in his mind, the commercial success was the strongest of the secondary considerations, which suggests he considered all of them. And just because he didn't detail...
You're referring to page 24 and 25 of the new appendix, now the opinion, the portion of the district court's opinion about objective
yes.
and DCF non-obviousness.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. He says he looked at all the factors. He felt the strongest one of those factors was commercial success. And then he went on to say, and that wasn't good enough in light of the overwhelming evidence of invalidity based upon the prior art. You know, the court was not required to detail, and we cited some cases in our brief that showed this, the court was not required to specifically address each factor that Mr. Hoffman raised below. All the court was required to do, and he did do, was consider everything and render his judgment.
But on summary judgment, and I think this goes to Judge Newman's point, the court is required to grant all inferences in favor of Mr. Rogers. And the question I have as a follow-on to Judge Newman's is on the copying matter, where the inferences what was the other evidence with respect to copying?
We had ample evidence in the record that there was no copying, and it wasn't really an inconsistency that would create a material fact dispute. Roger said below that he gave a tape to Dessa. Dessa looked at it and magically came out with this poll a few months later. While we don't agree with it, we assumed it for purposes of the motion. But what we also did was present unrefuted evidence, both in declaration form and in deposition testimony, that showed that Dessa had been working on an extended pole subproduct since the 70s, had specifically included in that consideration using detachable chainsaws. You could take them off and use the chainsaws independently, and that the only thing that was holding them back was they did not, an adequate pole was not yet available, a pole that had the adequate strength, the adequate weight, and an acceptable price. That has nothing to do with the patented invention whatsoever.
So it's just the timing is just a coincidence.
Yes. As you can appreciate, a pole that was 25 or 30 or 40 pounds heavy or at a cost of $1,000 would not be a successful or an appealable commercial product. Instead, the total pole saw now ended up being about 8 pounds. The pole, the chainsaw itself is only about 6 pounds. It's lighter than many hedge trimmers. And the pole itself is about 2 pounds. And so about the mid-90s...
Is this the 1.25 horsepower Remington that you're using as the chainsaw on the end of the commercial device?
You've gotten in that, Your Honor. I know it does
that's
use the Remington
the
chainsaw.
That's the particular device that's referred to.
Yes, and that is the one, in fact, and that is the chainsaw.
I'm just curious if it's the same exact chainsaw.
I think it is.
Okay.
It is the same chainsaw that's in our product was the chainsaw that Mr. Rogers used specifically because of its lightweight.
Okay, so that's the 1.25 horsepower.
Okay, and the real rub was waiting for their improper pole that had an acceptable strength, weight, and price. And when that came through, and it's unrefuted in the evidence, no matter what inferences you want to accept for summary judgment purposes, it's unrefuted in the record that we had this months before he approached us.
Let me ask you this question. We have evidence, as you, I think, correctly said, that in the summer of 96, August, that the Mr. Longarm poll came to the attention of DISA employees, and that it was, I think, October, it's undisputed, it was October 15th when Mr. Rogers approached DISA. Do you have any evidence of any activity between August and October on the part of DISA with respect to this project?
Yes. We have communications between DESA and its main customer, Home Depot. When originally DESA showed Home Depot a poll, saw in the mid-90s, and Home Depot rejected it because it wasn't light and strong enough and cheap enough. They went back, they got another poll, they made up another prototype, and they showed it to Home Depot, and they said this was acceptable. And once they had that clearance, they went ahead and launched their commercial program.
And what evidence is, could you point me to that evidence? I don't want to take up your time, but maybe one of your colleagues can.
We do have several declarations.
Okay, that would be helpful for me. Thank you.
Testimony on that. Now, in response to some of your other questions, first of all, Judge Prost, your comments before were exactly right. All of the elements in the prior art were present, and in fact, all of those elements were present and more. The only elements that Rogers contended below were not part of Moore were the electric chainsaw, the electric chainsaw, the trigger, and the trigger depression device. And to this day, Rogers continues to contend that Moore does not teach the electric chainsaw. It does. It does. As set forth in our briefs, Moore specifically teaches using, quote, electrically powered handheld tools to trim tree branches. That's at column 1, lines 48 to 49, and goes on to say...
But that's not a chainsaw.
Pardon?
That's not a chainsaw. They make much of the fact that that does not show a chainsaw in that context.
Yes, and what the patent goes on to say is that you can use tools besides hedge trimmers. You can use other power tools as long as they're light enough and they're electric.
Yeah, but it doesn't say a chainsaw, and it isn't part of the argument that a chainsaw, they tend to be heavier, they vibrate a lot, they encounter a good deal of resistance. This isn't cutting twigs. This is going through branches.
Yes, and in fact, the prior art teaches, and a person of ordinary skill would know that you can, in fact, use a chainsaw on the Moore device. The quasi prior art patent, for example. Remember, Moore said you can use any electrically powered hand tool. A quasi patent defines electrically powered hand tool as an electrically powered chainsaw. The prior art defines this as part of the tools that can be used for trimming trees. In fact,
you see the problem and the thing that's troubling me with hindsight after we see Mr. Rogers' design that works. All of a sudden, out comes such a tool by the very people to whom he showed his design, using all of the elements that are in his patent. I gather, although the trial court didn't reach infringement, that infringement could be fairly straightforward if the patent survives. I guess I don't know the answer to that, and I don't want to ask you to say something that doesn't have to be said. But even just making that assumption, the circumstances here are difficult, aren't they, to overcome? That's why I thought Judge Bryson's inquiry as to activity in this period before Mr. Rogers showed that it could be done and how to do it would be helpful because, with such activity, I didn't recall that there was any defense of prior knowledge raised. only that we maybe were working on it, or except the record shows that Dess had been working on it for a long time, so that doesn't help. And again, I make these comments in the context of summary judgment.
Yes, I appreciate that. And I think the evidence was fairly overwhelming that Dessa was aware of all of this, and the only thing that they were missing was this adequate poll, and they were informed of that well before Mr. Rogers even.
And I don't recall your brief saying that the entire structure and everything else existed with a trigger in the handle and all of the details which are in the claim. I don't recall that in your briefs.
Within Dessa itself, it did have various different prototypes. In fact, one of the prototypes that it showed Home Depot, I think in 1995 or 1996,
Did you present that in your brief?
Yes, ma'am. And it's in a declaration, too. Let me find it. Sorry, I'm going to try to find this very quickly. But there was a declaration from somebody from Home Depot that specifically says in 1995 or 1996 that Dessa had shown him showed Home Depot a prototype with these elements, except it was rejected.
Do you have the place in the record?
Yes, ma'am. Let me find it.
Because I must say, I don't recall the position that absolutely everything was there except the pole was too heavy.
Difficulty. I apologize. Finding it on the spot. Here's one, a declaration of Steve Jansen. The declaration starts at A885 and continues to 886. And in paragraph 4 of that declaration, Mr. Jansen, who is a vice president of merchandising at Home Depot, says, in 1995, or the first half of 1996, again, well before Mr. Rogers claimed to have contacted Dessa, I met with Dessa in Chicago. During that meeting, Dessa showed me an electric pole saw which incorporated a removable and independently operable electric chainsaw mounted on a telescoping pole. And this is the claimed invention. Dessa proposed that the pole saw be sold by Home Depot. I rejected Dessa's proposal because, as I told Dessa at that time, the electric pole saw was too heavy and consequently would be unsafe and difficult for the user to control.
Did he talk about all the other claim limitations? That is, the trigger and the other things which are claimed in combination?
It's not spelled out in that much detail in this declaration, but it has to have been there. It's inherent. If you have a telescoping chain, if you have a telescoping pole with a chainsaw on one end, and a remote switch on the bottom to turn it on and off. A chainsaw, by definition almost, because Underwriters Laboratories requires this, and every chainsaw has this, a chainsaw by definition has a trigger switch. It's a safety.
This is the dead man switch.
Yes, it's exactly right. So you have to have that. So the only way that this tool would even work would be having a trigger depression device, and Rogers doesn't dispute this, that it would be inherent in a pole saw with a chainsaw. You need to have a trigger depression device It's necessary to have one to keep the chainsaw turned on the top end of the pole, so when the operator wants to use it and pushes the on-off button on the bottom of the pole, the tool works. So those items, although they're not spelled out directly in the declaration, were inherent in what they showed Home Depot a year or so before Rogers contacted DESA.
Graph summary judgment on claim elements on which there's no evidence?
Well, I think there is evidence. And the other thing to recall, Your Honor, is the evidence of the prior art is so overwhelming, the court is allowed to review the prior art and weigh in the secondary considerations. And here, when you have the Moore patent, which doesn't say chainsaw directly, but uses a phrase that people skilled in the art and, in fact, the prior art define as a chainsaw, and there are other items of prior art that have chainsaws on poles, like the Causey patent and like the Buckeye device, which are chainsaws and poles. I mean, Judge Bryson was exactly right there. The only items missing from the Causey patent were a telescoping pole and an internal coiled cord. The Moore patent expressly teaches the desirability of using both of those features in the Causey device. It specifically says you need to have a telescoping pole so you can reach the hard-to-reach places, and you need to have an internal coiled cord so the pole can be extended and contracted without ripping the cord and without ripping the cord away from the electronics and without dangling from the outside so it won't get caught up in branches and trees. So what I'm suggesting... Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I thought you were going to say something.
I was going to ask a question when you're done.
I was just going to say, even if the court gave some credit to the allegation of copying, that can be overcome by the overwhelming evidence of prior art invalidity in the record. And that's what Judge Fikens did.
You mentioned in your brief, and again, you repeated here, that the, I guess the standard, what is it, the UL standard?
Underwriter Laboratory?
Right. Underwriter's requires, Laboratory. Requires a trigger switch on chainsaws. Is there evidence in the record to that effect?
Yes.
And could you point me to that? Because
There's
a question as to whether a chainsaw inherently has a trigger switch. If that's required of any commercial chainsaw, then that would be evidence pertinent to that question.
Yes, and again, I don't think Rogers disputes this, but there is a declaration that submits the Underwriters Laboratory requirement, and actually has a copy. So I was actually just looking at it as I was answering his questions. It's the same declaration, second declaration of Dave Fisher, that starts at the appendix at A844. And if you go to A847 and 848, and apparently 849, this is the UL standard for electric chainsaws. And in there, in a section, it's page 848, it's paragraph 24.4. It talks about the on-off switch shall be of a certain type and of a certain construction. And the point of this, as you say, Judge Bryson, it's a dead man's switch. The point is, if you drop it or you fall, the chainsaw turns itself off. I mean, it's an obvious safety feature. And, in fact, UL has required that since 1986.
Okay. Any more questions?
Let me ask you just as an aside another issue, which is the claim construction by the district court judge. Is there any dispute, and I should ask the other side this too, that the district court simply accepted Mr. Rogers' claim construction? Because there is a lot of claim construction analysis in the opinion,
yes,
followed by a statement that he's accepting the appellant's claim construction.
Yes, and what happened was, the procedure was as follows. DESA filed a motion for summary judgment of non-infringement, urging certain claim constructions. Rogers came back with his own cross motion for infringement, urging different constructions. We saw those constructions and we filed, another motion this time for summary judgment of invalidity, saying that if Rogers' claim constructions were correct, the patent is invalid. It's so broad, it would be invalid. And in fact, as we filed that motion, we told the court that defendants would accept Rogers' claim constructions for purposes of that motion. And that's in fact what the judge did. And yeah, I believe he discusses that a little bit in his opinion. But that's exactly what he did. And so what we have before us today are basically the accepted claim constructions that were urged by Rogers in the court below. Does that answer your question, Judge?
Good. Thank you, Mr. Witkoff.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Hoffman, we'll give you your full rebuttal time. We ran over with Mr. Witkoff.
I had an answer to your question, if I'm allowed, a further answer to your question, if I'm allowed to give it to you.
Well, that would... Yes. A citation, is that what...
Yes.
Yes, if you could give me the citation,
yes,
I appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
Please, or read it into the microphone.
Okay. I'm sorry, Judge Bryson had asked us to find it. And in addition to the items I already read before to answer your question...
Just the citation, please.
It's the page is A856.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Witkoff.
That's all you need? Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Judge. I'd like to start off by addressing the UL standard and its pertinence here. The UL standard was brought in to show that Moore had to be a chainsaw because chainsaws require, that Moore had to have a trigger depression device. Because since chainsaws need trigger depression devices, the argument goes that Moore inherently has a trigger depression device. The problem is the answer presupposes the issue. Moore doesn't show a chainsaw, so there's no requirement that there be a trigger or a trigger depression device. We've shown other hedge trimmers that have simply on-off switches, as even is acknowledged by their expert, Dr. Radcliffe, in defining the Drake and the Bantha patents.
But would you agree that if a device such as Quasi, which actually recites a trigger device, but if it didn't recite a trigger device, it would be inherent in the use of a commercial chainsaw?
I have no doubt that, no disagreement with that.
Okay, and so it really, as an independent limitation, it loses independent significance once you, if you accept the notion that the Moore reference to other devices incorporates a chainsaw. I recognize you don't accept that, but if you were to accept that, then you would pick up with the chainsaw the trigger device. Is that a fair conclusion?
I would say that's a fair statement, okay. If you accept that premise.
Yeah, all right. I understand.
And for the reason you state that, I believe that Moore specifically teaches away from chainsaws just for the reason that it doesn't have a trigger depression device. Therefore, you can't have it. It makes no accommodation for a chainsaw, which by definition would require one. Again, a reason to look away from Moore in the combination. The Janssen Declaration that was cited was one that I specifically addressed in my argument. Mr. Janssen says that DESA showed me this product in, late 95, early 96. There's a problem with that declaration. It conflicts with what DESA's own documents say they were doing. DESA says that they ceased all work on the project in 1993, not to be resurrected again until August 96, after the time Mr. Janssen says, I saw one. If DESA wasn't even working on it, what did they show him? It wasn't the device. Janssen conflicts with what Mr. Rohr says and with what Mr. Fisher says, and more importantly, with what DESA's own internal documents say. Also, the question about whether or not when DESA resurrected the project, the timing on that is pretty indicative of, I think, what really happened. Your Honor asked, is there any documentation that was submitted between August of 96 and October of 96 when Rogers showed him the design? And I submit there is none. The only thing that happened was DESA resurrected the project as identified in a January 3rd, 1997 memo, A788 in the record. That's where Mr. Pilofsky, the specific individual to whom Rogers sent the saw, resurrected the project. So it came after the mid-December date was the last communication between Rogers and DESA. I've addressed the main points that I wanted to address.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Hoffman, and thank you, Mr. Witkoff. The case is taken under submission.